A Prairie Home Companion is brought to you by Yoplait. With 72% of adults not getting enough calcium, Yoplait is the yogurt with calcium and vitamin D in every cup. Products, recipes, and health information is online at Yoplait.com.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. It's been hot and humid out there. Some people are sitting around limp in the face of their air conditioners with their arms wrapped around them, and other people are not so troubled by 105-degree heat, you know? Just depends on your upbringing, I guess. A lot of people believe that you just open your windows at night and you put a fan in there, and then when mid-morning comes, you pull the blinds and you close the windows and you should be able to get along all right. They don't piss and moan about the heat, but other people are troubled by it. And they're troubled by these people who are not troubled by the heat. The soldiers among us. Carl Krupsbach is one. He works awfully hard. Man of strong character. Works hard in all of this heat and goes off. And air that is so humid it's like breathing cream of mushroom soup. And other people are wilting around him and expressing incredulity. And he goes off to work on people's houses. He was off working on the outside of Clint and Irene Bunsen's house. They had some rotted siding there where the air conditioner leaked. It's upstairs where Irene has been sleeping in the hot weeks because she doesn't want to sleep with her husband for fear she may kill him. He was at work there repairing the siding. No, she's afraid she may, I don't know, throw a hairdryer into the shower while he's in it or something, because he's just so cheerful in the heat all of the times. Down there at the garage working, the men down at the garage don't have air conditioning. They just have big fans blowing the air out. They got funky music that they're playing loud. They're wearing their swimsuits. They're wearing those wife beater T-shirts. They're all so happy, sweating. Manly sweat and doing a man's work to bring perverse machinery under their control. They're happy doing that. Men keep cool, you see, by thinking about winter. And we're so lucky to have all of these memories. The coldest winters, which were a long time ago, long before you were born, but I remember them. I remember when it was 40 below every day for about 3.5 weeks, no, 4 weeks actually, and the car was frozen up, antifreeze froze, and we busted up the old mahogany chiffonier for fuel. And let me tell you, mahogany does not burn that well. It smokes heavily. We lived on cat food for about a week until that gave out, and then we had to eat the cat. I don't know if you've ever eaten a cat, but let me tell you, I don't think it's anything that's going to catch on. They're like pork, except they're kind of gamey and they're kind of tough. And then there is the difficulty of eating a creature that you knew so well. And the memory of that cat's last accusing glance when she knew what was up. This was a terrible winter. This was the winter that my great aunt Cooter went berserk. She was running from room to room and she was crying out about seeing Jesus up on high. And she was taking her clothes off. She was saying, "I want to put on the new raiment. I want to take off the old raiment, put on the new raiment." She was not anybody who you wanted to see undressed. There might be some you would not mind if they went berserk and were running around. We had to throw a quilt over her, and we kept wrapping her up, and she kept ripping them off. She had been weak and puny for years, but insanity really made her strong. This so often happens. She'd been unable to lift a fork up to her mouth, and now she could overwhelm two grown people. She was a handful. We just ran out of patience with Aunt Cooter that cold 3 weeks of winter. We threatened to eat her. We said, "You remember what happened to the cat Snowball, don't you?" Well, Well, it just didn't matter. I guess when you see Jesus, it doesn't matter. So she kept howling and howling, and finally we had to tranquilize her, and I guess we over-tranquilized her because she died. But she went quietly in her sleep, which was what she wanted, and she saw Jesus, so that must have been some comfort to her. And actually, there wasn't enough meat on her to really make it worthwhile. So we dressed her up in her Sunday clothes, and we put her in a cedar chest. It was too cold to dig a grave at all. We thought about using dynamite, but the relatives of other dead people were upset by that. So we just put her out in the woodshed. We eventually used the cedar chest for fuel, but she was pretty firm by then. So we just leaned her up against a wall. And there was Aunt Cooter leaning there. Every so often, one of her eyes would pop open and we'd have to go out and shut it. It was awkward to look at. And she was not a great beauty, and death did nothing to improve her. So we weren't afraid of wild animals coming and chewing on her. And anyway, we did run a couple of traps out there in the yard for wolves, and it was while I was out checking the traps that I fell on a piece of ice, and I slipped, and I broke my leg. I was only about 10 feet away from the back steps, and my feet went out from under me, and I broke my leg so bad that a piece of bone poked right out through my trousers, although they were corduroy. Just poked right up. Now, when it's that cold, you see, there's not much pain. So it didn't bother me much, except just the sight of it troubled me. I tried to crawl back to the door, but the sound of that piece of femur scratching on the pavement sort of unnerved me. So I lay there. My cousin Rocky was in the house, and I threw some ice chunks at the kitchen window to alert him. And finally, when I broke it, he came to the back door, and he asked me what I wanted. I said, "Come on out here." He said, "It's cold out there." I said, "I realize that. I'm lying out here with a broken leg. You see, I need you to call the ambulance. And if you don't," I said, "I'm going to die out here." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Darling, call the ambulance." He said, "You never called me darling before. You don't like me. I know that you don't like me." He was just beyond reach. He was just standing just beyond my reach. I said, "Well, I think the world of you. You're a kind and charitable person. You're a Christian boy. I think the world of you, Rocky." He said, "Well, you never said anything about it before." I said, "Well, I didn't want to give you the big head." I said, "But I need you to call the ambulance now. Otherwise, I'm going to die, and people are going to be sad, and they're going to blame you for it." He said, "Well, let me think about it." I said, "I may freeze to death out here, Rocky." He said, "I could do it, but what would you give me to call the ambulance?" I offered him a bicycle. He was 10 years old. He said he preferred cash. I was going to grab his leg if he came out. I said, "Toss me the checkbook." He brought the checkbook out. I was going to brain him with a chunk of ice. But he flipped the checkbook over to me, and I couldn't reach him from there. I said, "How much?" He said, $1,000. I was starting to write it out, and then my best friend Sandy came along. Now, there was a wolf who was approaching. I saw him out of the corner of my eye. There was a wolf approaching, and I was hoping he'd go for Rocky. He was coming towards me. My best friend Sandy came along, and he scared this wolf away with a rake. I said, "Call an ambulance. I'm about dead." He said, "You know," he said, "I could do it for $500. So I gave him $500. And I was taken to the hospital, and as you can see, I'm pretty in good shape. It could be a lot worse. I kind of lost my jumper, my jump shot from the corner. But, you know, there's a price for everything. And $500 isn't that much to pay to go on living. There was supposed to be a wedding in Lake Wobegon, but it was postponed by the cold. The Deaner's daughter Joan was going to get married to a boy named Kevin, and then she decided that she needed to wait. She needed to think this over. So she called him up, and she said it was off, at least until spring. They had all the champagne and all the hors d'oeuvres, so they had a party anyway. The Deaners. This was last night. And a lot of people came. They tried not to talk too much about Joan and her decision to think things over. But it did make people think about their own marriages. And if they should have waited and thought things over. There's a lot of people looking at each other in a soulful way and wondering if they might be happier under other circumstances. But you just don't want to go there. You just don't want to go there. It's a beautiful summer. The cicadas are singing in the afternoons, and strawberries are plentiful, and the first sweet corn is being picked. And you lie there in the afternoon on the porch, and the fan is blowing air on you, and you're eating strawberries out of a dish, and you're thinking about those 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 ears of sweet corn. Young sweet corn you're going to have tonight, slathered with butter and salted. And think about how good that's going to be. Kings and emperors have longed for that. John Keats wrote poems about this. People have dreamed about it. Beethoven wrote his whole Sixth Symphony about this. And it's not his greatest symphony. But it's good enough, and so are you, and so am I on a summer day. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.